this is Gillian from Rest Reflection. Welcome to this episode of At Work, our fortnightly podcast on all things inequality, injustice, and oppression in the workplace. And for today, it is me again. I am your host. And before we get into it, I would like to invite your questions, your queries, your dilemmas. So if you are struggling with particular issues and you would like to give us an opportunity to reflect with you, please get in touch using atwork@restreflections.co.uk or contact@restreflections.co.uk. And so today I would like to muse on an issue that can be quite complex to think about. This issue of consent, and it's related at least partly to the data that I'm grappling with in my research. It's an issue that keeps cropping up in my data. So I'm trying to make sense of it in relation to issues of whiteness in the clinic, of course. But here we are trying to think about the implication for the workplace. So I'm going to try to make some link and to make some connection and to also bring my lived experience, because my interest primarily is always to try to make those connections, to try to think about those patterns. So I'm going to try to give some kind of shape, some kind of form to those issues that are cooking in my head as I am making sense of my data, grappling to some degree with some of those themes in my life and making connection with issues happening in the workplace. So things are still quite in infancy in my thinking, but let's see where I go with it. So, basic definition of consent, basically when we consent to something, we give our approval, we say that we agree to something or to someone do it something. So we say, yes, you can do that something. We are in agreement. Very basic. We don't have to get too scientific. We don't have to get too scholarly because things will get quite complex, I think, in a few minutes. So let's try to keep it simple. Let me start by sharing a couple of disturbing things that have happened to me over maybe a couple of months, where I find that things have happened where my consent wasn't necessarily sought. I like dancing. Some of you might know because I talk a lot about dancing being one of my key sources of connecting to joy and connecting to ancestry and connecting to the spiritual and connecting to the divine in some way. So dancing is very important to me. So I go dancing quite regularly these days. On a couple of occasions, I went dancing and it was in two different venues. So that's important because you have that pattern starting to establish itself, becomes a pattern if it happened, of course, more than once. So I caught the photographer for the venues attempting to take a picture of me in those venues as I was dancing or I was sitting. But nonetheless, I caught these two men attempting to take pictures. And I'm quite maybe sensitive, but I'm quite aware of my image being used. And so I don't want my picture to be circulated without my consent. And I thought it quite odd that this man didn't ask whether it was okay for them to take my picture and also appear to be almost concealing the fact that they were taking picture, even though they were part of the venue. It was quite clear because they had kind of semi-professional looking camera, quite bulky camera, but because it was quite dark, they could almost conceal the camera if it wasn't for the flash. And if I was not quite attentive to my surrounding, they might have got away with the fact that they were taking picture. In any event, I just caught sight on those two different occasions that they were taking pictures of me. So I went to them and I said, can you not take picture of me? And I asked them to delete the picture that they had taken. It might well be that they were taking other people, but I knew that I was definitely in their field of vision. So I would have been in the shot. So I said, don't get my picture. I don't want to feature in your picture. I don't want to feature in any advertisement campaign or whatever you're planning to do with that picture. I didn't consent to being in this picture. Please do not take my picture. I think on both occasions, they were a little bit irritated that I said delete the shot and they deleted the picture on the spot. There was other things about consent that happened to me fairly recently that kind of put me on high alert. I realized that I would go in those spaces and men being men, when they would try to get into your space, sometimes they would bump into you trying to get your attention. Very immature pickup artistry, let's call it. So this kind of spatial enactment, let's call it that, as neutral as we can. Initially, I didn't make the connection, but I thought, okay, that's interesting. Now, let's park that for a minute. Let me take you to my data. Part of the theme that came up again and again in my data was patient talking about the experience of whiteness in the clinic, where therapist over an other appeared to be breaching quote-unquote boundaries, where therapists would either overshare personal experiences or they would be dismissing their experience of racism, so engaging, we might say, in gaslighting tactics, or engaging in politics of denialism. I mean, if you follow a little bit my work and you are familiar with my framework of epistemic homelessness, you know how that is a way to get into the epistemic space. So getting into complex scholarship now, a way to get into the headspace worldview of the other. Right? A way to gaslight in a way and to make the other doubt their very own reality, of course. So that's what we call epistemic. Well, I call epistemic homelessness, so that the other is no longer certain of what is real and what is unreal. So they, in a way, kind of lose grasp, if only momentarily, of reality. So we can say, also, that there is an act of occupying the epistemic space of the other. We're still dealing with consent. Are we getting closer to the core issue here, which is boundary, which is border? So I put two and two together, of course. I was thinking about this kind of breach of boundary, the issue of consent, whether we're talking about men attempting to get my attention by breaching my personal space, whether we're talking about these people attempting to get pictures without seeking my consent. This issue of consent, this issue of boundary, starting to become quite important. It's still important. I'm still thinking about it in terms of whiteness and in terms of white supremacy, and very specifically in terms of racial trauma, about how that features so heavily in racial trauma. And it's not coincidental, because as I tried to explain in Living While Black and also in White Mind, the very idea of trauma is centered on a breach of boundaries, psychic, physical, sexual. That is very often a breach of boundary when we are talking about trauma. That's not a new idea. From Freud onwards, this idea of breach of boundary is quite central to the idea of trauma. So it is not a surprise that when we are thinking about whiteness, particularly whiteness as coloniality, as colonial violence, that we would see this enactment via spatial or territorial embodiment. It is not a surprise. So we need to think about this breach of consent as the colonial enactment of whiteness. I hope it makes sense. Bear in mind that I'm trying to muse and I haven't scripted these things and my head is getting a little bit hot. But let me summarize by saying this issue of consent takes us straight to the heart of whiteness, because it is directly linked to issues of boundary. The failure to seek consent is a breach of boundary. And whiteness, white supremacy, per excellence, is founded on breaching the boundaries, the borders, the sovereignty of the other, whether the bodily sovereignty of the other, whether the territorial sovereignty of the other, whether the psychic sovereignty of the other. So, of course, when it comes to the everyday quotidian enactment of white violence, we are going to see some repetition, some reproduction of those politics. And so that's why, in my mind, I connected this issue between those men trying to take pictures of me and those men getting into my personal space, and also this breach of personal boundaries. I think we are talking about the same issues. We are talking about the coloniality of interpersonal relationship, particularly those racial interpersonal relationships. So what does it mean for the workplace? What might it look like? Now, if you remember, a couple of years ago, I did an episode where we mused on envy, on white envy. And in that episode, I discussed the case of this person I used to work with who developed the habit of drinking from my mug. Now, the issue was that I wasn't too fond of that practice. And in fact, I did everything that was in my power to stop it, which included telling her that I wasn't fond of that practice and buying everyone mugs in an attempt to ensure that my mug, which was my personal mug, which was a mug that I bought for myself and that I brought into the office, might be saved from her intrusion, bearing in mind that there were other people who would go into this office, but she was the only one who took an interest in my mug and who would disregard my request that she would please not drink from my mug. So here we have a nice example of breach of consent. Another example, which is very common, and again, gendered and racialized, which is bodily contact. When Black women, and I speak about that in Living While Black, have their hair touched. So touch, physical touch of any kind without seeking permission, without asking for consent, is obviously going to be a breach of consent. It is going to be always problematic. Something that might occur across racialized borders, possibly even across gender, is when pregnant women have their tummy rubbed, touched, caressed. That is an obvious breach of consent. And of course, boundaries. And we can see here that there is a huge overlap between lack of consent and lack of boundaries. And we can see, therefore, that it is useful to remember that the two tend to come together. Another one that people might not put two and two together on is the issue of gossip. Of course, when rumors are spread on particular bodies, when people spread lies, or when people spread correct information or speculate about people's lives and people's circumstances without their consent, there is also something that I say go at the heart of borders and boundaries, but also there is necessarily a breach of consent because the person that you are talking about didn't give you their permission. And so where does that leave us? I guess is the next question. So we do know that there are a myriad of ways where consent is bypassed, is not respected. Those who have histories of bodily subjugation, of territorial subjugation, of colonialism, of enslavement, we need to be very careful what we are doing. When I speak as a group analytic thinker, as a group analytic scholar, I always say that we get pulled sometimes in those sociopolitical, we could even say historical current, to repeat patterns of exclusion, of violence, of marginalization, without necessarily enacting a personal agency. And that's why it is very important that we note who's consent in the workplace, even though it appears that the issue might be a trivial one, because there is a whole context and trivial issue upon trivial issue upon trivial issue might actually add up to a bigger pattern, a meso picture, and a macro structure. Essentially, what we are talking about here, we are talking about trauma. One of my key research interests is trauma, is intergenerational trauma, is how the micro, the meso, the macro repeats and then reinforces all these level of communication. You didn't take someone's consent. Why didn't you seek that person's consent? It's not a small issue. It's a significant issue. You have discounted that person's autonomy. Why? We need to reflect on the why. If we choose to discount that, that is also a communication, we would say, in analytic thinking. That is also data. We are making a choice. And so therefore, the question is, why are we making that choice in these circumstances? Who is being served by that choice? So I would invite everyone to think about consent. The danger is always, I say, but I'm bound to say that because I'm a group analyst, the danger is always to individualize issue and to think about it's that person and it's that person and this person is a good guy, this person is the bad guy. You know, this is the danger, because that rarely solves the problem. That often just means that things become located in one, usually two individuals that become the site of the disturbance, we might say, that becomes the location of the problem. We need to take consent seriously in the workplace. We need to pause and wonder and be curious about what else might this tell us about the culture of the organization. When someone's consent was unsought, what does that tell us about the culture? What does that tell us about the particular dynamic of the team? What particular toxicity might that reveal about the team, about the organization, about the institution? But also, and perhaps more significantly, and this is what I want to leave you with, what risk this particular person might face, the person's whose consent is not being sought is usually a person who is at risk. That is all, my good people. Until next time, please take care.
Subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to send us queries, questions, and dilemmas to be reflected on, please email atwork@racereflections.co.uk.